The podcast on Haunted Hill will contain spoilers and swearing.
I am the devil, and I am here to do the devil's work.
He saw this light come. Be one of us.
I didn't tell you my name.
Hang up.
I didn't tell them my name.
Oh, hello, you've caught me. I was singing a little song and doing some dusting in the Dan's Dungeon. Well, welcome to episode 6 of our patron exclusive episodes. Well, let's get cracking because it's October, it's Halloween. And on the last super mini exclusive episode, Gav and I talked separately about our 31 movies we're watching. Now, I'm taking it to the extreme, as you can probably imagine with me. It's no secret, I'm aiming for the 100 movies in October. So I think last time in the episode we talked about the first 20 I'd watched. So I'm going to step things up a little bit in this one, and I'm going to whiz through the next 30 that I've watched. So hold tight, grab your seatbelts, and let's run through what I've been watching, because as you can probably imagine, it's quite a lot of weird and varied stuff. Here we go, Dan's Dungeon. Right, so after we last spoke, since then, the next movie I watched was a Sam Raimi superhero horror movie called Darkman, which I'm a big fan of from my childhood. I used to love that one, 1990. It's got the legendary Liam Neeson. Liam Neeson. I can't do an impression of him at the moment. I'll try and do that another time. Liam Neeson basically is in this movie, and he is a brilliant scientist left for dead who returns to exact revenge on the people who burned him alive. It's got some ropey effects in it because it's 1990, but it was really that first sort of people really trying CGI. Great movie, Darkman, if you haven't seen it, check that one out. It's a good one. After that, I checked out a movie I'd never seen before, which I believe is still on Netflix UK, and it's called Fear. From 1996, starring Marky Mark Wahlberg and Reese Witherspoon. And it's basically, I would describe this as the teen version of Fatal Attraction, which sounds shit on paper, but actually, this was a really good gripping thriller slash, it's got some horror elements to it, much like Fatal Attraction does. The synopsis goes, when Nicole met David, handsome, charming and affectionate, he was everything. It seemed perfect. But soon she sees that David has a darker side, and his adoration turns to obsession, their dreams into a nightmare, and her love into fear. That's the title of the movie, Fear. It's really good, really gripping. It's got some very dark, violent end scenes. Really worth checking out. That's Fear. After that, I went old school and went classic, and I watched an old, cosy 1944 black and white movie called The Uninvited. It's quite a famous one. A lot of you probably would have heard of it, directed by Lewis Allen. The synopsis goes, a composer and his sister discovered that the reason they're able to purchase a beautiful Gothic seacoast mansion very cheaply is due to the house's unsavory past. Really good, almost like a whodunit slash thriller, but definitely a ghost story as well. And like I said, it's got that cozy black and white, glass of red wine, it's raining outside. Sunday afternoon type feel to it. Loved it, absolutely loved it. After this, I went for a sequel to a movie which I really enjoyed when it came out. The original was called The Boy. The sequel is called Brahms The Boy 2. You've probably heard of the first one, probably heard of the second one. It's about a doll, a creepy doll. We've seen this before, whether it's Chucky or Annabelle. But I don't know, I really enjoyed that first one. This one was okay, didn't quite live up to the original. But it's decent anyway. Says a family moves into the Hillshire mansion and their young son soon make friends with a lifelike doll called Brahms. It's what you expect. A creepy kid, a creepy doll, a creepy house, creepy things going on. It's worth checking out. I quite enjoyed it. I just didn't feel it was as good as the original there. Then I watched, if I remember correctly, this was an Irish horror movie starring Shauna McDonald, who famously was in The Descent. So it's called Nails, as in I'm biting my nails or a tooth and nail. And the synopsis goes, recovering from a terrible accident, Dana struggles to regain her life and family when she encounters a malevolent ghost in her hospital room. Should have been really good. It's 2017. It's kind of that isolated one room, can barely move because you're recovering from a very horrible accident, car crash, so she can really not move very much. She's got lots of pins in her and she's all sort of wired up, and there's a ghost that keeps appearing, but actually it's quite boring at times. I only scored it 3 out of 10 on IMDb. Not worth speaking anymore about that. Talking of not really going to worth speaking about, I also watched a movie with Dolph Lundgren. Yes, that Dolph Lundgren, and it's called Shark Lake. Terrible. Not even going to talk about it. It was 1 out of 10. There's a shark in the lake. Dolph Lundgren's kind of in it. Forget it. Moving on, though, I did watch an awesome documentary which is really doing the rounds at the moment, called In Search of Darkness. It's a really long documentary. It's about 3.5 hours long, but it's an exploration of 80s horror movies through the perspective of the actors, directors, producers and special effects craftspeople who made them, and of course their impact on contemporary cinema. It's a really, really thorough documentary. I love a good documentary, especially a documentary on films, and especially a documentary on the subgenre of horror. This is brilliant because it only really looks at 80s horror. It takes you through each year, one at a time. So you start with 80, we end with 89, and you really see the progression of the effects, the way that the craft, and not just horror movies generally, and the amount of people that are in this is awesome. Pretty much most of the big hitters are in this. It's that whole Talking Heads thing. They show lots of clips of really great movies. It really makes you want to go back and either seek out movies you haven't seen, which for me, you know, there was definitely a few there that I hadn't seen that I wanted to go back and have a look at, or it makes you just want to revisit ones you have seen. It's really, really good, and you would have heard of In Search of Darkness. It came out last year in 2019. So that's that one. Moving forward, I then watched a great movie which I covered for Bite Size Cinema Podcast with RJ McCready. And that is Friday the 13th, Part 6, Jason Lives. It's my favourite entry in the Friday the 13th franchise. It came out in 1986. The synopsis goes, Tommy Jarvis goes to the graveyard to get rid of Jason Voorhees' body once and for all, but inadvertently brings him back to life. The newly revived killer once again seeks revenge, and Tommy may be the only one who can defeat him. It's kind of what you'd expect, but it's the Jason movie that really changed the franchise, in my opinion. It's the one where they started adding a lot more humour. It was just a lot more comic booky. Absolutely loved it. I think it was the first Jason movie I'd seen, and I can't recommend it enough. It's just awesome. Awesome, awesome, awesome. After that, I then watched Road Games. That's the 1981 movie starring Stacey Keach. Yes, that's Stacey Keach. And Jamie Lee Curtis. It's an Australian-American production. The synopsis goes, a laid-back American trucker driver in South Australia starts to suspect a man driving a green van of killing young women along his route and proceeds to play a cat-and-mouse game in order to catch him red-handed. So it's kind of got that mystery vibe, that whodunit, but in a vehicles. It's got that Steven Spielberg Duel vibe to it. It's really, really good. It's got some brutal bits at the end, and it reminded me of The Hitcher. I had seen it once or twice before, but I wanted to revisit it, as it's obviously October and Halloween. So it's a good time to do that. Then after that, I visited the island of Dr. Moreau. Not the Val Kilmer car crash, although I do have a lot of love for that one. This was the, not the original, because there's been a few of these over the years, but this was the 1977, directed by Don Taylor, starring Burt Lancaster and Michael York. And if you don't know the story, it's about a shipwreck survivor who discovers a remote island owned by a crazed scientist who's carrying out sinister experiments on the island's inhabitants. I like this because as a kid, I quite like that whole human-animal hybrid thing, and it's kind of got a bit of a werewolf vibe to it at times. You get like a bear man, a pig man, a tiger man, all that kind of stuff. I love it. It's great. It's got some great practical effects. Not much more to say, really. The Island of Dr. Moreau from 1977. After this, I decided I wanted a bit more Jason in my life, and I'd only seen the remake, well, not the remake, the reboot, I guess, from 2009. I've only seen it once or twice, so I decided to go back and check it out because it's on Netflix UK, and I was really disappointed, unfortunately. I only scored it 4 out of 10 in the end. It's kind of that at least it wasn't an origin story, I guess. And it's got one of the guys from Supernatural in it, Jared Padalecki. It's what you expect, really. Beautiful boys, beautiful girls, all having sex and smoking weed and getting killed off by Jason. The guy that plays Jason is Derek Mears. He's awesome in it. He's really hulking, intimidating, imposing character. That's the best thing about it, for sure, like the Jason. And that, as it should be, Jason has got to be one of the best things in the film. But it's just a little bit flat and disappointing. I know a lot of people like it, and it's certainly watchable. I just wouldn't rush back to watch that one. What did I do after that? Well, then me and the wife sat down and we binge-watched The Haunting of Bly Manor over a couple of nights. And we were both severely disappointed because, obviously, The Haunting of Hill House was just an incredible achievement in television and filmmaking generally. It's from Mike Flanagan, and we were really hoping this was going to be brilliant. It was really well shot. It looked beautiful, but the story just kind of wove in and out of all these different tangents. To me, I was in it the whole way, but when it ended, I realised it didn't really go anywhere, and the ending didn't relate to this bit, the beginning didn't relate to that bit. I don't know. I still scored it 6 out of 10, but it felt like such a flat piece of television after watching the original Hill House from the year before. It's worth a watch, but it's not scary. It wasn't even scary to me. In fact, it didn't even feel like a supernatural tale at times, apart from the odd ghost popping up. It just felt a bit strange. So moving on from that. After that, I decided to watch Adam Sandler's new Netflix horror comedy, Hubie Halloween. You're either going to love or you hate this, really. Most people are going to hate it. I know it's got a lot of hate online. Gav and I both love this movie. Adam Sandler plays a strange character that lives in a town of Salem who is a Halloween monitor, essentially. He goes around making sure that health and safety is being covered and everyone's doing it safely. You've got Steve Buscemi as a werewolf. You've got a Michael Myers-type killer escaped from a mental hospital. And all the Adam Sandler usuals are in it, all the cameos. I enjoyed it. It's fun. I knew what I was going in and getting, and I got what I needed out of it. It's got that great Americano vibe, what you imagine Halloween to be like in America, you know, with the leaves and the kids all wandering around. It's got loads of nods to Halloween and horror movies generally. So for me, I loved it, but I wouldn't recommend it. If you don't like Adam Sandler or you don't like his style of comedy, you're probably going to want to avoid that. I stuck with the comedy after that and thought it was time to revisit a sequel to Scary Movie. So I watched Scary Movie 2, which didn't really hold up as well as I remember, but it's still not bad. The first one, I think, is the best out of that franchise. The second one, I think they get progressively worse. Scary Movie 2 just was okay. Just not as fun as I remember. And the jokes seem really dated. They make a lot of jokes about commercials and advertisements that are out at the time, which are obviously going to date the film when you go back and watch it. But you've still got some bits in it which are fun. And the sort of the way they take the piss out of other horror movies is always fun. Then I watched a masterpiece, because for our 100th episode, as you will know, we covered Shaun of the Dead. So I sat down to review that. Umpteenth time I've seen it. 2004, Simon Pegg, Nick Frost, directed by Edgar Wright. What more can I say? It is a nigh on perfect film. Extremely funny, and it's a real love letter to horror, but zombie movies especially. And I don't need to say any more about it, because you all know about Shaun of the Dead. Wanted to go classic after that with one of my absolute favourites to watch around this time of year, Halloween 3, Season of the Witch. We all know the jingle. I'm not going to sing it because it will get in your ear. Or am I? No, I'm not. Silver Shamrock. I've just done it. Sorry about that. It's a weird movie. It's one that I owned on VHS as a teenager. And over the years, both for myself and just the general public seemed to... A love for this movie seems to have just grown and grown and grown and grown. It's nothing to do with any of the other Halloween movies, apart from a couple of weird nods. So Michael Myers isn't in this, but it's got robots, Stonehenge, witchcraft, kids' heads exploding and snakes and bugs coming out of them. It's got Tom Atkins in it. It's got everything you need, really, to make your Halloween fun. That's Halloween 3 Season of the Witch from 1982. It's quite an infamous movie now, or famous movie, or cult movie. It's just brilliant. A lot of fun with that one every time I watch it. And it'll be one I probably go back to pretty much every year around this time, to be honest. After this, I did a couple of short films. So I went back to revisit a short fan film called Never Hike Alone, which is available to watch on YouTube. It's about 55 minutes long, and it's a Jason Voorhees fan film, but it's made so perfectly that it feels like it could just be another Jason movie. Gav said he wishes it was about 30 minutes longer to push it up to the 90 minute mark, and I understand what he means, but I'm quite happy with the hour's length, really. It's fun, it's got a great Jason interpretation in there, and it's about a hiker who goes with, it's kind of found footage at times, he stumbles upon the old abandoned camp and slowly realises he's not the only one at the camp. Obviously Jason's there, and it's pretty decent, pretty dope. The reason I watched that is because after this, my next film that I watched was a sequel of sorts to that. So the same people that made that short film have made Never Hike in the Snow, which dropped only a few weeks ago. Again, it's completely free to watch on YouTube. This one is about 30 minutes long, so it's about half the length. And actually, in my opinion, it's about half as good. It's still fun. It's got Jason in the snow, Jason with a bow and arrow. And it does follow on from that first one, but it just doesn't quite live up to it. However, because the two combine, Never Hike Alone and Never Hike in the Snow, equate to 90 minutes, it's worth watching them both in a row, to be honest with you. They're both free on YouTube, and I definitely would recommend them. It's not often I'll watch fan films and include them in a list like this, but I think these ones are ones that are definitely worth mentioning. Wanted a bit of werewolf action after that, so I went to Ginger Snaps from 2000, and boy did it feel like 2000. Now, I really love this movie, and I love that sort of late 90s, early 2000s era sort of style of, you know, there was lots of metal music in the soundtrack and lots of goths. And this is about two sisters who fall into the sort of werewolf curse. One of them specifically, Catherine Isabel, she is bitten by a werewolf, and every month as her period comes and the lunar cycle comes in, she starts displaying more and more animalistic tendencies. And there's lots of gory deaths and gruesome deaths in it. And what's cool about this as well is that the two sisters in it, Catherine Isabel and her sister, played by Emily Perkins, they're really into horror movies and death and gore, so they got a hobby where they sort of take photos of themselves dressed up like their dead bodies and stuff, which sounds really creepy, and it kind of is, but it's kind of cool, really. We all, you know, we're all horror fans, we can all kind of relate to that. So yeah, Ginger Snaps, it's a classic. The sequels are absolutely terrible, I wouldn't bother. I'd really like to cover Ginger Snaps at some point, though. It's a real sort of girl power anti or pro hashtag me too rape culture type movie, and it's 20 years old, believe it or not, which is crazy, really. But what did I watch after that? Well, then I went for a TV show, and I did 10 episodes, because that's how many there are, or was it 8, of Slasher. Is a TV show which I discovered last year, I think, and the third season came out recently. It's on Netflix UK, it's probably on a lot of streaming channels. And it's a Canadian anthology show where each series there's a different serial killer. And it's just simply called Slasher, and that's what it is. And I really enjoyed it, actually. I really liked season one. Season two was a little bit of a drop in quality. But season three, I feel like they really picked it back up. Really obnoxious characters who you just can't wait for the serial killer to start slicing and dicing. It's a real versatile cast. People of all ilks in life, so they kind of tick all boxes for that crowd, which is great. And got some great gory deaths in it, and also it really kept me guessing. It's a real whodunit, so you know, you're not sure all the way through, much like the early Scream movies, not quite sure who the killer is. Fantastic. Slasher, if you haven't seen Slasher, check out seasons 1, 2, and 3. They're roughly 8 to 10 episodes per season. It's a Canadian horror anthology show. It's kind of got that little bit of that American Horror Story vibe to it. After that, I went sort of Hollywood. Maybe it's not a horror movie, maybe it is, but it's Super 8 from 2011. I'm a big fan of this movie. It's got that Stranger Things, Goonies, E.T. vibe, kids on BMXs in the 80s, that kind of stuff. Although this one is actually set in 1979, but I really relate to this film because it's about a group of kids who are into making horror movies on their little video recorder, and you know, they do the makeup, the zombies, and they do all the, try and do their effects with models, and they accidentally witness a alien or a giant creature escape from a huge train wreck at the beginning of the movie, and as usual the adults don't believe them, and it's down to the kids to save the day. It's got some great twists in it. It's directed by J.J. Abrams, who obviously at this point, this was early in his career, but he was really starting to gain momentum. And it's produced by Steven Spielberg. And you can really feel, in fact, if you showed this movie to somebody and said it was directed by Spielberg, they'd probably just believe that it was, because it really has his fingerprints all over it. And that's Super 8. Love that movie. What did I do after Super 8? Then I watched Legend of Hell House from 1973. Great movie. Starring Roddy McDowall. I was recommended this by Bo Ransell, who covered it for his 31 Days of Horror mini podcast he's doing at the moment. I'd never seen it before. It's got, like I said, Roddy McDowall in it, and the story is a physicist, his wife, and two mediums are hired to investigate the Belasco House, where 27 guests have inexplicably died in 1927, along with the most of a team of paranormal investigators that were sent in the early 50s. So there's a lot of weird darkness to this house, and it's just one of those creepy horror haunted castle almost movies. I love these kind of films. I talked about The Uninvited. You know, we obviously, our podcast is named after The House on Haunted Hill. These kind of movies I absolutely love. Something about them, maybe it's the Scooby-Doo kid in me, I don't know, but The Legend of Hell House, great movie. I then decided to do another great movie, as most of these are, and I watched The Dead Zone. The Dead Zone from 1983, starring Christopher Walken. I'm not going to even attempt to try and do an impression of him. It's a great movie. It's a Stephen King story, and it's directed by David Cronenberg. I mean, just that alone is awesome. It's got Tom Skerritt in it, as well as I mentioned, Christopher Walken. A man awakens from a coma to discover he has a psychic ability, and he kind of goes around whenever he shakes somebody's hand or touches somebody, he gets a little bit of a look into their mind. And there's a lot of sort of flashes of death and visions and stuff. It's a great movie. It's Christopher Walken, probably one of my favourite roles of his, and it's a movie that I always forget just how good it is. I go back to it every 2 or 3 years and think, oh yeah, this movie is actually really fucking great. After that, I went very old school. And I went back to 1931 for a little bit of Dracula, the original Dracula, with Bela Lugosi, obviously directed by Todd Browning. And what more can you say about Dracula from 1931? It's an absolute classic, and it still holds up to this day. The sets are some of the most amazing sets you'll see. This and Frankenstein, for me, the original Frankenstein from Universal. Both of those have some of the most incredibly gothic set design you'll see. That's all I need to say. Dracula. I then decided to revisit to visit a sequel to a movie that came out straight to Netflix a couple of years ago called The Babysitter. Really, really, really loved that film. It's directed by McGee. So The Babysitter Killer Queen, which is the sequel, dropped just about a month ago on Netflix UK and probably US and everywhere else. And again, it's directed by McGee, and it follows up on the original. It's set 2 years later. The kid that survives the original movie, the Satanic Blood Cult, is living a nightmare of high school, and demons from his past are still making his life hell. It's got a lot of the original cast in it, but it just felt like a bit of a cash-in for me. I ended up scoring it just 4 out of 10. The original was like a 7. It was a really strong film. This one, not quite. It's worth a watch. I know it. A lot of people have read online and on the Facebook page really not into it, which is fair enough. I can understand that. It was all right. The character is a bit obnoxious, but that was The Babysitter Killer Queen. Then I decided to have a look at another classic, one that I haven't seen for years, and it's an anthology movie from 1971 called The House That Dripped Blood. And great movie, anthology of 4 horror stories around a mysterious rental house in the UK. So the sort of wraparound is a guy that's sort of showing the house to different people, and different stories of different things that have happened within the house. I won't spoil it. I would highly recommend checking it out if you like your old school anthology movies. They are making a bit of a comeback now, these horror anthology movies, and this is a really, really good one. And just the title alone, The House That Dripped Blood, awesome title, poster is great for it, and it's actually a really good film, so definitely would recommend that. Another one which most of you guys would have seen, a Tim Burton animated classic, I decided to watch The Corpse Bride from 2005. It's quite scary when you see some of these dates that these movies came out, because some of these films only feel like they were released a few years ago, and this is now 15 years old. Obviously voiced by Johnny Depp, Helena Bonham Carter, you've got your classic Tim Burton royalty that, you know, always show up in their movies, but there's a bunch of other actors in it. I think Christopher Lee does the voice, as well as a bunch of other people you'd expect in a Tim Burton movie. And it's all about a very shy groom who's practicing his wedding vows in a graveyard, and he accidentally causes a corpse to rise from the grave who assumes that he's married her and kind of goes to the underworld, and then she comes to the real world, and they do they find love, do they not find love, who knows. I was reminded of this film when I watched a Disney movie which dropped a year or two ago called Coco, which is just an incredible movie about the Mexican Day of the Dead and the afterlife and that kind of stuff, and there's definitely similarities between them. Obviously Corpse Bride came much, much earlier, but it's definitely a brilliant watch, really creepy. Tim Burton doing what Tim Burton does best, and I think he works really well with animation. And on a sidebar, I've heard that he's working on a Addams Family Netflix show, which is kind of sounds like a dream come true, because it's surprising that he's never worked on anything Addams Family related in the past. Moving forward, I then watched the other film that we were reviewing for our 100th episode, which was Hot Fuzz, which you could argue isn't horror, but by the end of us reviewing it, Gav and I realised there's definitely horror vibes in Hot Fuzz. It's got very much a Wicker Man feel, as well as a obviously an action cop mystery whodunit, and it's hilarious. And actually, on reflection, although Shaun of the Dead is an absolute masterpiece, I actually feel Hot Fuzz is a slightly better film. They've really honed their craft by the time they made this one. Simon Pegg, Nick Frost, Edgar Wright directing again, and you've got a really great cast supporting them, including the one and only Timothy Dalton with an awesome moustache. Great movie, Hot Fuzz. I'm sure you've seen it. Disappointed by my next watch. This is the third time I've seen it. Halloween from 2018. Now, I went to watch this with Gav at the cinema when it first came out. We were super excited. We seemed to really, really enjoy it. I watched it again last year and thought, okay, not quite as good as I remember. And unfortunately, on my third view, it has come down a little bit again. It's still a brilliant film and much better than most other horror movies out there. But I just feel maybe it just loses something on repeat views. I don't know. I might have to leave it quite a few years before revisiting it. But it's still a great film. I'm not going to slate it at all. That's the reason I watched it again, is because it popped up on UK Netflix. And I was super excited to see that come up. I was like, yes, I can watch this at home. I can pause it when I want and do a wee. All that kind of stuff. After Halloween 2018, I really, really, really wanted to watch something scary. Something I'd never seen before. And I'd heard whispers about this next one being all of those things that I wanted. So I checked out a film from 2014 called The Houses October Built, and boy was I not disappointed. This was absolutely fucking brilliant and probably one of my highest recommendations on my list thus far. It's about a group of five friends who decide to go on a road trip where they visit all of these different haunted house attractions around the states. And they start being stalked by a weird group of individuals. Some of them dressed as clowns, one of them dressed as a doll. And it takes a bit of a Blair Witch vibe turn in about the three quarters of the way mark. It's brilliant and I cannot recommend it enough. It really disturbed me, it really scared me and left me with a really creepy, uneasy feeling. And I would highly recommend The Houses October Built. It did a really good job of making you feel like at times, because it's found footage, you see. So it did a great job of making you feel like you're in some of these attractions, going around, you know, not knowing who was going to pop out at you. Brilliant stuff. Went back to 1971 for my next one. I watched The Beast in the Cellar. Soldiers in a rural English town are being brutally murdered by an unknown creature. Two sisters living nearby realize they might understand what's happening. These two sisters essentially have got something in their cellar. I won't spoil the film in case you ever want to check it out, but it's fun. It's kind of not a horror film by the end of it. I realised it wasn't really a horror film, but there's still some definite horror vibes to it. There's almost a bit of a slasher serial killer vibe to it, as well as the soldiers in this little village are getting taken out one by one each night. Someone's on patrol and they get taken out and no one knows what it is. Is it a werewolf? Is it a beast? Is it a creature? Is it a man? Who knows? You'll have to watch it and find out. And the last one I'm going to mention for this bonus Patreon episode, actually, I better mention two more because the next one is a bit of a downer. I watched Ghosts of Mars, John Carpenter. Wanted to give it another chance. You know, it's got a weird cast. Jason Statham, the Stafe. It's got Ice Motherfucking Cube, Natasha Henstridge, Pam Grier, and obviously it's John Carpenter directing. I wanted to give it another chance because having reviewed Escape from New York, I was looking into the trivia on that and I realised that Ghosts of Mars was originally going to be the third Escape movie with Snake Plissken playing the role that eventually went to Ice Cube, and it was going to be called Escape from Mars. But various things happened on the way. I think Kurt Russell didn't want to be involved. There was some stuff with the studio. So they ended up just making Ghosts of Mars, and it's still as shit as ever. I gave it 2 out of 10. And I'm really sorry, I absolutely love John Carpenter, but it's a really bad film. There's a few bits about it that are okay, but it's bad. I'll end on a high, and that is, do you like Nazis? Do you like zombies? Do you like Nazi zombies? Do you like Kurt Russell's son? I'm talking about the one and only Overlord from 2018. Again, I was excited to see this pop up on my UK Netflix because I'd only seen it once. Brilliant movie. Everything you could want from a movie that's only 2 years old and stars Wyatt Russell, Kurt Russell's son, who's definitely going to, you know, become someone to watch, much like his dad. A small group of American soldiers find horror behind enemy lines on the eve of D-Day. They basically stumble across a huge lab where Nazis are experimenting on people, bringing them back from the dead. And it's got some incredible practical effects. I believe, if I remember correctly, it's about 90% practical effects. There's very little CGI in it, which I'm an absolute fan of. So there we go, guys. That takes me up to number 52. So at this point, I can tell you now, I'm getting close to hitting 100, but you'll have to come back for the next Patreon episode to find out what my last 48 films were. Yes, that's a lot of films, but I love watching fucking horror films. Okay. Well, that's enough for me. I'm going to go back to singing my songs, and I'll hand you over now to the grotty grotto of Gav. Gav, are you there? Gav?
Dan?
Gavin?
Dan?
Gav!
Ah, there you are. Hello, everybody. This is the bonus Patreon episode, which you get in your lug holes whenever we do them in between the other episodes. Thank you very much for being patrons. Massively appreciate it. So continuing, I'm not like Dan. I haven't done a ridiculous amount of films. I've just done the 31 and 31, and I've managed to do it in time to record this and get this out to you guys, because obviously Dan and I can't bend time. We can't change it and get this so it's live when it comes out on the 31. That'd be very impressive of us, but we can't do that. So we have been just putting down our lists of what we've been doing, as you know, if you've been listening. So continuing on, now I feel like I got to 15 last time. So continuing on would be number 16. I went in and watched a movie called Dead Air. This is a film with Bill Moseley. It's essentially a zombie play happens, and Bill Moseley happens to be a radio DJ, and it starts off fairly alright. The production value is not too bad on it, actually, and it starts alright, actually, and Bill Moseley's actually kind of alright in this, and he's obviously a host, DJ host, and has like a couple of other people with him, someone he plays off of, and you got the producer there and stuff, and basically just a zombie outbreak kind of happens, and it's kind of a virus has been done by some guys, and then they break into the studio and they go up to the Bill Moseley's studio where it's a live studio to actually sort of try and take over the airwaves as such, and put across their propaganda what they're saying, because they've released the virus out there, and apparently Bill Moseley's radio show gets like 1 million viewers, so it's a good, obviously a good place to try and put across propaganda or whatever you want to say from the terrorists. It's alright, 5.2 on IMDb, it's from 2009, it's okay, it's not amazing. You could do a lot worse, to be honest. I'd think if you saw it on like the Horror Channel or something like that, I would probably suggest checking it out, but don't go out of your way to watch it, I don't think. Okay, rolling in with my number 17, The Legend of Hell House. Bo was doing a has been doing a 31 and 31, but each day just reviewing a little 5-minute segment or whatever for what he's been doing, and he influenced me to watch pull this out my old collection, Legend of Hell House. 6.7 on IMDb. This is a 1973 flick, and it's got a young Roddy McDowall in it. He's quite young, young indeed. It's a good flick. If you've not seen this one, it's a very good haunted house movie where just the four people sort of go along to investigate what's going on, and they're different. They have different things that they can do, different skills and stuff to take along to the house. Kind of the same as like The Haunting, that sort of thing. It's a very sexual movie. I think this would pair quite well with The Entity. It's really like, there's one point in it, a woman is essentially being raped by a ghost, like in The Entity. And yeah, it's a very sexual movie. The ghost is just really fucking horny. So he just tries to... One of the women in it, one of the guy's wives in it, the main guy who's investigating his wife, she kind of gets possessed by it. the horny ghost is in her, straight in her, and she's just really like, come on, touch me. She's really full on. It's a bit like, whoa, chill out, woman. It's a good film. If you've not seen this, it's a very good film. If you like the old haunted house movie and you've never seen The Legend of Hell House, and come on, look at that name, The Legend of Hell House, that's a decent name. But that is a pretty good film. Next up, number 18, I went Friday the 13th, part 6, Jason Lives. This is one of my favourite Friday the 13th movies. It was one of those movies I managed to watch with friends late night, like on Sky Movies, I think, back in the day. It's one of the Friday 13th, it always seemed to be on more than the others, and I feel like I probably watched this one more than I saw the original ones and stuff, and it's weird watching this one and going back to the other ones, because this almost sets like a baseline or a staple of what Friday the 13th movies are. Almost a bit ridiculous, silly kills, over the top acting at times and things like that, but everything you love in a Friday the 13th movie, that's why you watch Friday the 13th films. If you've not seen Friday the 13th part 6, Jason Lives, you should definitely see that. You should see all the Friday the 13th movies, really. We are going to get back onto Friday the 13th because I've watched a couple more, but we'll get back to those. Number 19 in the old 31, I did Paranormal Activity 6. Me and Jay, my eldest child, I've been letting them get into horror. Whenever I say, do you want to watch a movie, they're like, yeah, let's watch horror. So okay, that's a bit of my influence on them, and they are doing film studies at school, so it's quite, which again, it's kind of my influence, really. I didn't mean to make a child totally into obsessed by films, but I kind of have. So we've been doing the whole Paranormal Activity series, and we've got to part 6. I like part 6, that's the marked ones. It kind of steps away from the house and the women in the house, the woman and man, the woman with long dark hair, the man, because they're quite in it for all of them. This one's kind of like more Latino gangster type thing going on. It's kind of like in the different sort of suburbs of where the other films have been shot, and it's got more of a youth to it, and it kind of feels like that movie which older Max Landis wrote. I'm trying to think what her name is now. Can't think. I'll know this when I listen to this back. that one where the kids get, it's a found footage movie, Chronicle, that's it. The kids get like superhero powers, and that's quite a good film. And this is kind of the same in the Marked ones. The kid kind of gets almost superhero powers, and I love the fact there's a shot where he like board slides down a rail, but he ollies like really, really high, and it's obviously CGI weapon, and it's so and goes down a rail. I kind of dig that. But I kind of like this film. There's a few nice little spooky bits in the stuff, and towards the end it goes a little silly, but consider it's a six of a Paranormal Activity movie, it's a six part, it's not bad. They're kind of hanging in there, right? And I've got to admit, that series I'm kind of happy with. I think part four is a bit silly, part four is alright, to be honest I kind of like all of them. They all got little gems to them, and I'll quite happily go back to them at any point, because they've got nice little scary bits and they've done alright, you know, they're not taking it too far, they're okay. So that was my number 19, and then next year they are releasing a next Paranormal Activity, which should be number 7. I'm all up for that. Okay, next one, number 20, is a classic. I love this film. It's a Universal movie. It's they managed to get James Whale back again to direct a film. He did like Frankenstein, Bride of Frankenstein. He managed to get him back, and he just wanted to just do something himself, kind of. And Boris Karloff almost doesn't have a role in it. Boris Karloff was like the main moneymaker for Universal Films. Boris Karloff's name would always be there, but above Lugosi, as much as Lugosi may not have liked that. But this is with Karloff as a pissed servant, really. A big lumbering guy. But he's not actually the scary part, isn't it? The scary part is this crazy maniac guy who's mad, who lives in another room. And the only reason Bob Karloff is there, his character, he's so big, is to actually contain and keep this guy safe. But if Boris Karloff gets drunk, it all goes tits up and he gets drunk. Anyway, The Old Dark House is a good movie. I thoroughly enjoy it. It's supposedly set in Wales, England, and it's three people in a really shitty car, which you just, nowadays you look at it, you're like, how on earth could you drive that car anywhere? Like, the suspension and everything's probably just terrible. And the tyres and stuff like that. But they're trying to drive through, like, some really shit terrain, which nowadays you drive through with, like, a 4x4, you know. You wouldn't think of driving through with, like, an old-fashioned car. But anyway, and it's pouring with rain. The rain's coming through the roof because it's, like, a little ripped vinyl roof. And they get to a house and they just go there. So it's your classic spooky house thing, ring at a doorbell, a big guy comes out, you know, that all that sort of thing. And it's got a couple of people that live there, like some servants, and they go, oh, we've got to stay here for the night. Okay, then some more people turn up, and just the people that live in the house are just a bit like, oh, don't, why are you here? And oh, God's sake. But they kind of put up with it. It's a really decent flick. If you've not seen The Old Dark House, you should really watch that. The Old Dark House was for Universal trying to get back to what they had made them famous originally, and it's from 1932, and I don't think it succeeded with what they wanted to do. I don't think it's as popular as the other movies. You know, the other films, the Dracula's, your Frankenstein's, your Invisible Man, your Wolfman. They all were set in stone stories originally anyway. These are from novels. These were spooky ideas. And this is just The Old Dark House. It's just taking the concept of The Old Dark House, that concept, and trying to make it spooky. I like the film. But yeah, it did do well in box office. You know, one of those things. Number 21, Hot Fuzz. I'm not really going to talk about Hot Fuzz because we did a big fucking 5-hour episode, which you can check it out, of the last podcast we put up. Hot Fuzz is a good film. Struggling to know if I find it better than Shaun. I can't tell. It's on par. Next up, though, just because I wanted to be completist with it, 22, I did The World's End. This is Nick Frost, Shaun, Simon Pegg, and older Edgar Wright coming back again, the three of them trying to do a movie. Don't like it as much as the others. You can listen to what we think about it. We kind of dissed it a bit hard on the last show, our 100th episode. I didn't mean to diss it as hard, but we just did. It's not as bad as we were going in. If you were going to watch it standalone, but I watched it directly after these two others, Shaun and Hot Fuzz, and it just doesn't step up. If you're going to just come in it alone, just to watch a movie one day, maybe. I don't even know if personally if I'm ever going to watch it again. I don't know. Number 23. Well, this is... I've just been watching, like, the... this is a series I've been watching on Shudder. It's a new Creepshow series, TV show. So it's really recent, and they're filming, like, a next season now. I know Joe Lynch is directing some episodes and stuff. Yeah, it's pretty good. There's some really good ones on there, actually. There's a werewolf Nazi type one, which I kind of really digged, actually. Stuck in a prison, in a jail. And I was like, I don't know what's going to happen, but I don't want to spoil it or say anything, really. I'm just going to say check them out. Not all of them that good. Some of them, all right. But actually, I kind of enjoyed the ones I watched, actually. Yeah, well worth a watch, actually. Sorry, I'm not going into the detail of that, because just check them out if you can, really. Number 24, Friday the 13th, part 8. This is where Jason takes Manhattan. Jason doesn't take Manhattan, really, though. Jason takes a boat, mainly, then does get to New York, which is actually it was filmed in Canada, but gets there, and he does try and walk down the middle of the street and just kick over some kids' ghetto blasters and all this sort of shit. It's Jason just being Jason. This one is a bit ridiculous, the whole thing on the ship, and they're filming like a music video with this big, it's hair metal, it's, I don't know, it's an alright movie. It's funny enough, I watched it going into it, I was like, oh, this is a great film, and came out of it going, it's not as good as I remember. It's kind of a fun movie, but it's actually not as fun. Like, watching part 6 was a lot more fun, because obviously this one, you're not really out in the wilderness so much. It's taking that film away. But obviously I know it does in space. But you still do get some sort of wilderness shots, actually, when they do like the VR and that. But it's all right, part 8. I wouldn't be my first to go through if I was just going to watch a movie. Friday the 13th, I'd probably check something else out. Number 25, introduced Jay to John Carpenter's The Fog. I think it's her first John Carpenter movie. What do I say about The Fog? It's The Fog. What can you say about The Fog? It's a great film. One day, I presume Dan and I might even do something like a commentary for the remake, just so we can diss the shit out of it, because that's a terrible film. But this one, it's a cool movie. It's The Fog, you know. 26, The House on Sorority Row. This was always a slasher I watched when I was a kid, for some reason. I think I had it on videotape, and I just watched this over and over. Watched it again, and it was a little bit boring. It was all right. It's a bunch of kids. If you've not seen it, it's like maybe early 80s. A bunch of kids at a sorority house, and they decide that the woman who runs the house is not so much fun anymore. So they decide to pull a joke on her, and then shit goes bad. Because they think they've killed her, or have they killed her, haven't they killed her? And then it turns into whodunit-y-est type thing, sort of. You know, it's all right. 27, I went for the original Friday the 13th. I was like, Jay, I'm just going to put on the original Friday the 13th movie for you. Which was kind of cool watching it with someone who's never, ever seen it before. Apart from it was my eldest child who had to sit through the Kevin Bacon lovemaking scene, which is a bit like, oh, bacon-making. Love bacon. The Kevin Bacon love bacon scene. There you go. Kevin making love bacon. There you go. That's even better. Say that 3 times quick. Kevin Bacon love making. Kevin Bacon love making. Kevin Bacon love making. There you go. It was good at the end when, obviously, because Jay was like, oh, I like all the POV shots, which was quite good because obviously this is quite an early movie for doing POV shots. I know we've got other films as well that do it. But it was still quite early for that. It was brilliant at the end when Jay's just like, oh my god, so Jason, what, so what, it was Jason's mum's the killer. I was like, yeah, Jason's not even in this film. Like, oh my god. Then right at the end, I was sitting there going, don't be looking at your iPad, please look at the movie. But I couldn't say, watch the movie now, because then Jay would know what's up. But there, the water scene at the end, Jason comes up over the boat, scared the shit out of Jay. I was so happy. it's probably the only time that I'm happy with my child being scared to shit, you know, but really scared, and I really like the fact that it still works, because it still brings you into like a sense of security. It's like, It's all right. We're finished now. The music's playing. The cops are turned up on the boat. What could actually happen? Brilliant. Number 28. I watched Bats with Lou Diamond Phillips. This was actually a fairly good movie. I got to admit, I fell asleep for it. I was struggling because I wanted to get through these movies for you guys so I could do it. But this is a movie from 1999, and it's kind of like before the 2000s. I think this movie probably just crossed. I don't know if people saw it. It's only got 3.9 out of 10 on IMDb. I think people may have just kind of dissed this, or I don't know. Or just got people missed it because it's Lou Diamond Phillips and they probably didn't think anything of it. I don't know. It's a pretty decent film. Like, it's kind of like saying, basically, it's not, it's very silly. It's not taking itself seriously in any way, but it's kind of like saying, look, you've seen Apocalypse Now. Fuck no. You've seen Arachnophobia. You've seen all these sorts of films. You know what's happening. So they're straight in there. No info at all. It's literally like, right, we need to corner off this town. Let's do this. Let's put da da da. And at one point, I love the fact they got these bats. And these bats are really good. They're prosthetic bats, by the way. But it's one bit that reminded me of the corona times. And it's just where they said, right, we need to evacuate the town. Everybody evacuate the town. So they go along. The people said evacuate the town. The important people, the main people. And here we've got Lou Diamond Phillips, a woman investigator who knows, not investigator, she's a scientist, whatever, and then she's got an assistant, a dude. So it's really mainly the three of them and a guy who invented the bats, because the bats have kind of been designed by the army or something, and they're like real gnarly bats because they're real big as well, and they're prosthetic as well, and they look really decent. They're actually kind of intimidating, actually, and I thought the effects look really good in this. But there's a bit there like, right, we need to evacuate the town. So they turn up at the town the next day and say, why is everybody still here? And they're like, well, they're Texans. Like, you can't tell them to evacuate. They think they know best. And not that I'm saying Texans in general, but it's kind of almost quite like England, America, a lot of other places where people, like, you know, it's coronavirus, don't do this. And they're like, we know best. And it was very amusing to have that kind of see that, because it's like, yep, that's what happens when it actually happens. But yeah, the bats, and that's actually on Amazon Prime, so you can check that out. House on Sorority Row is on Amazon Prime as well. Yeah, check out Bats. That's my number 28. Well worth a watch, I reckon, actually. It's like, don't take it seriously. It's a fucking horror movie with giant killer bats. It was kind of fun. You can't really, you know, I would possibly even suggest it to review with Dan. I don't know. Maybe if we had a good pairing with another animal. Number 29. Secrets of the Blue Room from 1933. This is a interesting film. This was Universal again trying to do something a little bit different. It's kind of the spooky house. It's a bit weird though, 'cause you got these four guys who all fancy this one woman. It's very strange because two of them are younger and one is older, two of them older. It's like, how the fuck did you get into this situation? Even just tonight, sitting in this room, how did you all get there? Just one woman, she's not even that hot. One woman and the four guys who all like her. It's very weird. And they're like, right, now you should go and give us a kiss. And she gives them all like a long, like, kiss, not a French kiss, like a real pushing on the lips. But all four of them right on the lips for quite a while, and they all just stare at each as they each do it. It's a bit like, why are all four of you men not, like, got a woman or doing something different? Why are you all here with your obsession of this one woman? It's really weird, and that's not really addressed in it that much. Anyway, so they tried to prove how clever they are, because in the house they're in, there's a blue room, which has been locked for years, because whenever you go in the blue room at 1 o'clock, you never come out. You go missing, which is a bit weird, or you die, which is strange. And it happens, and so people go into the room. But I won't give this away. It's an alright watch. You can find this on YouTube. It's only an hour and 6 minutes. The old Universal movies were only just generally over an hour. It's worth a watch. It does. It's classed as a horror. That's why I did watch it. But it's actually more of a whodunit murder mystery, because after the first half an hour of the horror element, it comes into a police procedural type film where you've got a detective comes in, you know the score, someone's been killed, a detective comes in and says, I want to interview everybody. It's that sort of thing. Then you try to figure out who done it. So it kind of turns into that. But it's not a bad film. That's called Secret of the Blue Room from 1933 on YouTube. Number 30, I did a classic film, which this is a film which made me feel sick as a kid. It's the only horror movie as a kid. I told my parents, please turn it off, and I had to go to bed because I felt ill. And it's Dracula, Prince of Darkness, the Hammer horror film. And the scene which made me do that was when the people get their throats slit and they're hung upside down so the blood all could pour out of them. I don't think it was the blood in general. Maybe a little bit, but I kind of remember it as well. I remember being a bit freaked out of it. It was kind of more of the idea of hanging someone upside down and all the drain all the blood out of them into like this vat. It just made me feel really rough as a kid. It's quite funny, really. That's a good film. I think it's the second in the Hammer Draculas after the first Dracula, which the American title was Horror of Dracula for that first one. In England, just Dracula. Dracula, Prince of Darkness is fairly decent. It's got the whole sort of pub thing. It's got this kind of real gnarly priest in it, father. He's a real gnarly guy. Has a shotgun and just goes to the pub, drinks, goes into the pub, which is his local pub, and says to him, "You are not all of my flock. I don't like any of them." Just like something that. It's like, oh, he don't give a shit, does he? He's literally like, he looks like the guy who literally just fight a bear if he came across one. And he's a man of God, you know. My number 31, to finish up my 31, I did it, yay. It was actually, I didn't do the whole watch one each day. Obviously I couldn't have done this recording if I had, but I found that quite hard to try and watch one every day, because some days I couldn't do it, and I did. I had a couple of days I couldn't watch films, it just was just not possible. So I just didn't when I could, so some days I can manage to get a couple out, especially when they're like an hour and 6 minutes, like The Secret of the Blue Room. Anyway, Kolchak. This is he's an investigator. I don't know this TV series. It wasn't very long-lived. It's in the early 70s. It's an American TV show where he's a reporter, and it's kind of X-Files-y. X-Files were influenced by this. And this dude goes and basically just investigates creepy things going on. But this is the movie. This is from 1972. This is called The Night Stalker. And this film is pretty decent. I was very impressed, and I'm going to have to check out the rest of the show, because there's another one which was The Night Strangler, which was another movie that came out. But there's basically some people have been getting killed, and the MO is of a vampire. And this reporter, Kolchak, he's just like, or Kolchak, I'm not sure. He's just like, yeah, it's a vampire. And they're like, just shut the fuck up, it's not a vampire. And he's like, it's a vampire. And he keeps saying it to the point where he believes it is a vampire. This is a decent film, because he's like, right, okay, they get to the point where they're like, okay, we'll listen to you. And he says, right, all the policemen need to have a cross, and they're going to have a hammer and a stake. And they're like, you're joking. He's like, no, for real. And then he actually discovers a vampire and stakes the vampire. And kills the vampire. I'm kind of spoiling it a bit, really, because I don't know if any of you could really rush out to watch it. This one's 1972. But because he does that, then the police say to him, like, basically, we've got a warrant here for your arrest for murder, because you murdered that guy. There's no, you know, we don't know what's happening there. And they're like, right, so you, but we won't do this. We keep this warrant, though, and we will arrest you, but you get out of town. Leave Vegas, go to another town. And he kind of feels sad for this guy, because through it, he gets this relationship with a woman, which he says, will you marry me? And she's really nice to him and stuff. And she says, how many cities and stuff have you been kicked out of? And he's like, I've been kicked out of this city twice, I've fired from New York twice. And he's just moving around America, trying to get jobs as a reporter, reporting on all this weird stuff. But every time, I assume it goes all wrong for him. And then he goes back to where they say, look, we're going to arrest you right at the end of the movie. And they go, what about my woman? They're like, oh no, we got rid of her. You won't see her again. What? We made her move out of the city too. And it's just like, what the fuck? And he has his hands tied. He's literally like, I can't do anything. The really good report I've made, which is going in the newspaper, I can't, they're not going to print it, because they go and just write something else, and we're just going to print that, that's what happened. And he's like, that's not what happened, I will tell the truth. And they're like, you can't tell the truth, we'll put you behind bars for the rest of your life. And I was more shocked by that than the whole vampire thing. And the movie itself, with the vampire and the killings of that, is really pretty decent. I definitely recommend this. It's on YouTube as well. The Night Stalker from 1972. But yeah, I felt kind of bad for the guy at the end, and just kind of finishes. One thing in it is a really good jazz music when he's doing his vest game driving around, like super good stuff. Like the drum beats are fucking amazing. Real funk stuff, funk jazz. Anyway, funk jazz is my last words on that. 31 and 31. There we go. Happy Halloween, everybody. I hope you enjoy this. And then next time, Dan and I will be back. I think he's going to continue on his 100 campaigns and list them all out a few, but I will probably just review one particular film next time. But thanks so much for being patrons. We massively appreciate it. Have a good Halloween, and whatever you do, stay safe. Don't eat apples with razor blades in them, and whatever you're going to do, if you trick-or-treating, because I think you probably can, just wear the mask and gloves, then you're corona-free, aren't you? Alright, take care, everybody, and we'll see you again soon.
Thank you for listening to the podcast on Haunted Hill. We will be back again real soon.